Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's easy to see how the City Time payroll contract was bad for the city. Remember the scandal? It was a $63 million deal for a private company to modernize the city's payroll system that then ballooned to costing the city $700 million. It also resulted in charges of fraud and embezzlement, so that was clearly bad. But was it a good deal gone wrong, or should the city have never been looking to the private sector to do the public's business in the first place? The billionaire businessman mayor was elected three times with the promise to run the city more like a successful business, taking a market-based approach to public policy. And so spending on private contracts has nearly tripled under Mayor Bloomberg, most without widespread fraud and abuse, we should say. But has it worked? And even when private contracts are successful, is there still a downside to privatizing public services and allowing private companies to influence public policy? This is the subject of a new issue of City Limits magazine called Beyond City Time. The two reporters behind this investigative piece of journalism are Adrian Day and Ruth Ford, who join us now. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How many private contracts does the city have, and for what kinds of things?
Well, I think the general term just contracts really covers it. When we talk about the private contracts, quote-unquote private contracts, that we look at in the piece, we're really looking at the contracts with companies that are offering policy recommendations. And those are very, very small compared to the overall contracting out, which is $10 billion out of a $60 billion budget. So the policy, the Deloittes, the McKinsey, the Accentures, the Boston Consulting Groups, those are small. It's the power that they wield that is pretty large.
You write that the kinds of things private contractors are asked to do has really changed under Mayor Bloomberg, namely that they're being asked to do complex IT projects that are really expensive and that you say raise issues around how dependent the city might become on these high-tech wizards. So what's the issue there?
Well, the issue is that it sort of indicates a philosophical shift in the way that the way that contractors used to be used and how they were relied upon in the city, like in terms of giving the city advice. And now they're brought in as more of a playing a larger role for one, also dictating policy. And often in the case for these IT contracts, people aren't trained properly in them has been a problem. So they end up sort of being baked into the contract. And so these individual private companies end up working with the city for a long term.
And why is that bad?
Well, I think two reasons. I mean, first of all, how the contracts have been written has changed. So there's a problem with work orders coming in, just flooding in, and these work orders are being signed off on. I mean, that's what you got with City Time. I mean, City Time started, I believe, it was supposed to be $63 million. And as you point out, Brian, it's, you know, $700 million. Those are change orders. I mean, these are things that, while have gone on in the past, I think under the Bloomberg administration, the trust, the implicit trust that has been placed in folks who don't work for the city is what the phenomenon is all about.
But that was a case of fraud. That was a case of criminality.
Sure.
Criminality ballooning from $63 million to $700 million. For the deals that have not gone sour, have private contractors been successful? Have they done the work more efficiently and more expensively maybe than their public counterparts could have? Did you measure it?
Well, I think, I mean, we looked at a couple of different metrics, and I think we had difficulty in some instances measuring things because we had difficulty, as we note in the piece, in getting a full picture from the agencies that we looked at. So just to back up for a second, so I looked at Deloitte, and Deloitte did a big review of the Health and Hospital Corporation, and Deloitte came up with a whole host of recommendations. Now, some of the recommendations that Deloitte came up with were completely reasonable, absolutely reasonable. I mean, one of the things that Deloitte said was, you know, HHC, you have these affiliation agreements with doctors who work at outside hospitals. This is incredibly expensive. You need to get a better deal on these agreements. I mean, that's good, smart advice. But Deloitte also said, geez, HHC, you're losing a lot of money. You have 80 community clinics. You know, what, think about closing a third of them. I mean, that would have disastrous implications for the city. So it's not the contract that the contracts are all good in the results or they're all bad in the results. The question is, who is watching, who is hiring these folks, who is overseeing it, and who's putting on the brakes if they're starting to go south?
And in this investigation in City Limits magazine, you focused on consulting contracts with NYCHA, the New York City Housing Authority that manages public housing, the New York Public Hospital System, and the New York City Schools. So let me ask you specifically about the school contracts. You say they generally have not been disasters, but they might not be the best way for a school system to spend its money. What were some of these biggest contracts with the schools?
Well, I examined in the education section a company called Maximus, which had developed a software system for special education kids called CSIS. Now, this is a software that they developed for the Chicago public school system under a different rubric. I believe they called it TNET. And so they repurposed it for New York. It originally was targeted to cost about $15 million. Now it's up to about $79 million. So it says in the contract, if you look at the actual contract, about $16 million. So basically they brought it in and, it's neither a win nor a fail. They needed something to track the special education students' individual education programs, the IEPs, which every special education student has. But the teachers that needed to implement it were not necessarily trained well in it, so there's been a lot of problems with that as well. And just one other point on that, it's all well and good that they have this new software system, but what they've found is that in order to help these special education students actually graduate and move on, they really require one-on-one work. So why was the money not spent on that?
I wonder if there are any contractors listening, people who run companies who have contracts with city government. When you get those contracts, do you see your mission as different from if it was just a private contract? Do you have a public service mission in mind when you get a city contract that you don't have as part of your consciousness when you're working purely in the private sector? Anybody with a city contract care to answer that question? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Adrian Day and Ruth Ford from City Limits magazine, who have just done a whole issue investigation on just how much the Bloomberg administration has privatized city services these past 10 years. And I guess there are two overarching issues, right? Whether these contracts actually do produce good outcomes, and then even if they are successful projects, whether there's something inherently bad about handing private companies control over public services and therefore influence over public policy, correct?
Well, I think that's one of the things that we were looking at, and we were trying to tease out two different threads. And one of the threads is, you know, you bring someone in to do a big, complicated IT project if you think this is the best person who can do it and can do it in a more cost-effective fashion. I mean, I think there's certainly many people across city government who could handle these big IT projects. But I think when you start to bring in companies like Deloitte or McKinsey and Boston Consulting Group, who are now making policy recommendations, who are now sort of talking to upper-level management in city agencies and saying, well, take another look at HR. What are you doing to enhance revenue? What are you doing to streamline your operation? What's your real mission here? As they drill down, they are directly affecting the mission of these agencies. And the question is, who has oversight over that? And I would argue it's supposed to be us. It's supposed to be the city council. It's supposed to be the taxpayer. Who said Boston Consulting Group gets to make decisions about New York City?
But since they're contracted with the city, is there not the same accountability? Because ultimately it's the city who's hiring them and the city who has to produce.
I mean, it's tricky because the New York City Housing Authority is a public benefit corporation. Health and Hospital Corporation is a public benefit corporation. The Department of Education, as Adrian looked into this so clearly. I mean, ostensibly it's under mayoral control, but the Department of Education really almost is like a public benefit corporation. I mean, these are agencies that really are responsible to some deputy mayors, and that's about it. I mean, they have more freedom than almost any other agency in New York City. And I know city council members whom we talk to are increasingly frustrated mm-hmm. with this, particularly Rosie Mendez of the Housing Committee. I mean, she was surprised that BCG got so much money the first time around, Boston Consulting Group. And then when they got 70% more, $4 million more in August, she said, why is NYCHA giving BCG a total of $10 million when they're coming to city council hat in hand claiming poverty? I mean, how is this working?
Yeah, just one other point to that, one phenomenon that we explored was the what we call the revolving door phenomenon, where we find that people who often work for these private companies will revolve into a city government job and then back again. So it's in their best interest to make everyone play nice with one another.
Salvatore in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. You've had city contracts?
I have actually not, but I invest in software companies that build and make software mm-hmm. for solving, specific problems and also more general problems. And I just wanted to point out, I think, when working with government agencies, the opportunity for changes to the scope of work are probably pretty prevalent, and that's where the costs end up escalating. And that would apply to any client, even private clients in the private sector. But without a really tight and narrow scope of work, this is where you end up with situations where you think you're going to spend, $15 or $16 million on something, and then all of a sudden it escalates to $79 million. But the other point I would make is that, in the private sector, what, we've been witnessing is really an evolution of software development where, specific problems that you're trying to solve with software are handled by more generalized applications at a much lower cost. And you look at companies, Salesforce.com, that's a pretty generic sort of application, but it's found many, many uses in the business world. And there's a very active development community around them that basically customizes the application so that they can be used in a variety of different ways that the application was never intended to be used. And I think that, the business world that, the private sector where you're under pressure to produce software profitably is really more willing to take advantage of these lower cost software development.
So there's some advantage to the public sector, you're saying, in coming to contracts like these.
I think. I'm sorry, I missed the comment, but I would say the public sector is sort of at a disadvantage, or they're not really looking at developing software the way the private sector might be looking at it.
Salvatore, thank you very much for your call. And you say in the article that having private contracts means there's little accountability for failure when there is failure, little transparency. But are these inherent to private contracts? Salvador seems to be talking about how the market imposes accountability in the private sector. So is there a way that the city can mandate more accountability through law for the performance of the contractors who they hire?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about Local Law 35 and the Outsourcing Accountability Act, the whole idea of beefing up the review of these outside contracts and assessing what exactly the contracts are going to do, whether they're going to be replacing city workers, whether it's going to be cheaper. I mean, certainly beefing up Local Law 35, which passed in 1994, is a very good idea. But I think it comes right down to how are the contracts written, who's doing the writing, and is the contract written in such a way with a very specific, this must be done by this date, this must be done by this date, and, are there penalties if work isn't done? And there aren't penalties for work not being done on time. And I think anybody who owns a house or owns some kind of business who brings in a contractor and the contractor says, sorry, I ran out of materials, then you say, well, sorry, I ran out of my checkbook.
We have 30 seconds left. What do you hope will come out of this special edition of City Limits, a full edition on privatization under Bloomberg? a new scandal, some kind of new accounting? What do you hope very briefly is going to come out of this?
Well, we hope that people take a closer look at these contracts and hold these contractors accountable for the work that they do, make sure they do the work relatively on time. And, you know, just keeping in mind that it's a time of fiscal austerity, you know, don't blow the whole budget on something that you don't need to blow the budget on.
The new issue of City Limits magazine called Beyond City Time, investigative reporters Adrian Day and Ruth Ford. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.